Good morning, everybody. I'm starting a little early, so hopefully we won't have people come in 20 minutes from now expecting to see this. I can do it again. I know these guys came to see this, so we're starting a little early. I want to thank everybody for coming to this session to see everybody else present as well. A lot of good things and a lot of good presentations to come. For this presentation, I want to acknowledge my co-authors, Mehdi Amadi. He's at Texas A&M AgriLife. Jim Askoff, who is a research scientist at USDA ARS in Fort Collins and a sister unit to ours, and soon to be joining our unit. And Christoph Kinsley, who is a professor at Florida Gulf Coast University. And today we're going to talk about sensitivity analysis of reference ET to sensor accuracy. And really what started the idea behind this study is that, you know, for irrigation scheduling, there are a lot of remote sites out there that have weather stations where we're trying to calculate a reference ET for the purposes of irrigation management. And as inputs to that, you have several different inputs that are used to calculate reference ET. And each of those sensors that go into that have a different accuracy. And so the idea is that if you have a sensor that has a poor accuracy, that could spill over into having a poor accuracy for your reference ET, which could then spill over into having poor accuracy for your estimated crop ET. So this is really trying to bring everything together so we can compare apples to apples, which of these sensors are giving us more inaccuracies in certain contexts. So our objective is to evaluate the accuracy looking at a local sensitivity. So if we're looking at one sensor at a time, what are the kind of outside bounds that we can expect? We use two methods of global sensitivity analyses, which is basically where you simultaneously vary all of the inputs and it brings you back to a single value that quantifies the sensitivity to that. And we also looked at two different locations, both a semi-arid Colorado location and a humid location, to see how they compare in different climates. So if we look at the ASTE standardized reference ET equation, okay, and hopefully most of you are very similar. Basically, you have four meteorological inputs: solar radiation, temperature, humidity, and wind. And so most of these weather stations will have, at a minimum, these types of sensors. So you have a pyranometer for your solar radiation. Typically, your temperature and humidity sensors are combined into a single sensor. And then you'll have an anemometer for your wind speed. So we looked at this using daily time steps from local weather stations. We used a short reference just so we're comparing the same thing. We also looked at a tall reference, but more or less came up with the same conclusions. We verified this model that I custom wrote with the RefET software, so it fit very closely. And then we aggregated these values into monthly averages for the purposes of presentation so we can understand over the course of a year how this changes. Now, just looking very closely at the locations, again, we have this first location, Front Range of Colorado near Greeley, Colorado. It's semi-arid. We get about 250 to 300 millimeters of precip a year. We do grow a lot of crops there, but they have to be irrigated to be grown out there. The Florida location, obviously Florida is much more humid, and I'll show you some weather data on that. A lot of turf grass out there. So ET is definitely an important component out there. These are images of the two stations. You can see the grass on the station and all the equipment. In this Florida, you do have a little bit of fetch issues with some trees, but they put their anemometers up high, so hopefully that scales a little bit out of it. The big differences here, though, is that, you know, obviously in Colorado we're a little bit higher climate, and we're looking at two different higher elevation, and we're looking at two different climates. And we took the records from these for quite a few years. So in the In the Colorado set, I think we're looking at over 20 years, and the Florida set about 15 years. This is the weather input data for both of these sites. So here you can see max and min temperature, and these are averages over the month. Max and min relative humidity, solar radiation, and wind speed. And so obviously with Florida, you don't have as cool of winters, but at the peak of the summer, we get some pretty hot summers in Colorado, but a lot less difference top to bottom. Florida, you're pushing 100% humidity on your high every day, whereas in Colorado, your values are going to be a little bit lower. One thing worth mentioning is in Colorado, we get some very windy springs. So remember that. We'll come back to that in a few minutes. These are average monthly values for daily reference ET for Florida and Colorado. And again, we have much drier climate in Colorado. So even though you have the warmth in Florida, during the summer months, you're going to see a little bit more ET in the summer. There's a lot of text on this page, I understand, but this is basically an outline of the sensors and the quoted accuracies that we have for what's currently used in both of these networks. Now, part of the problem is that we can't compare apples to apples if they're using different sensors. So this quoted accuracy on a temperature, for this particular model, they have a different temperature range based on what the temperature is. So in a middle range, the accuracy is pretty close, but as you get further from that, there's less accuracy. Personally, I like that because it gives you an idea of what it is throughout a range rather than just quoting a value or a percentage. These values are pretty close to the other sensor in the Florida network, and so pretty close is designated by a yellow arrow in this case. The humidity sensors, again, different models, but you can see that the quoted accuracies are very similar in these cases as well. And temperature sensors also have it, humidity sensors have a temperature dependence in both cases, and those were also close. Solar radiation really was apples to apples. We had the same exact model, LIKOR 200, which is pretty standard for those stations. Wind speed had a very big difference in the quoted accuracy. The COAGMET anemometer has a quoted accuracy of plus or minus 0.5 meters per second. They don't give you any range for that. And so because there is no range, it's difficult to interpret how that actually plays in. For example, if your reading is 0.5 meters per second, then according to that accuracy, you could be somewhere between 0 and 1. And so one of our conclusions I'll talk about more later is I think these accuracies for manufacturers need to be quoted a little more specifically, whether that's based on a range, a percentage, and also a confidence interval. Is it within this many, 100% of the time, 90% of the time, half the time? So we'll talk a little more about that. Local sensitivity is pretty simple. I kind of refer to this as testing the rails as far as worst case scenario. So if you take an input and you're evaluating, for example, solar radiation, and it's plus or minus 3%, then we took every single observation, every single day, and took that value plus 3% and minus 3%. This range that you see from the top to the bottom is the difference in the ET measurement from one end to the other. And this is all averaged by month. And what you can see is that the U2 is the wind speed. In Colorado, the wind is providing a lot more error than anything else is. If you're testing those limits. In Florida, it's a lot more balanced, and the overall top-to-bottom quantity is lower. So really, the takeaway from this is that the Colorado anemometer has a potential to bring a lot of error into the reference ET. Now, again, going back to how that's defined, there's a lot of assumptions made here. And I made the point earlier that With the higher winds in the springtime, at first you might think that would give you more error, but actually it gives you less error because the quoted error on the anemometer was plus or minus half a meter per second. Well, if you have a small amount of wind, then that half a meter per second is very large compared to, say, if you have 10 meters per second. Okay, so comparatively, it actually makes a much larger difference when you have lower winds because of that quoted accuracy. I won't get into the nitty-gritty about how these global sensitivity analysis methods work. They are pretty complex. I could probably take an hour to explain each of them to you, and it probably put all of you to sleep. What you do need to know is that for these sensitivity methods, basically they try to vary all of the inputs in a simultaneous manner, and then they get aggregated into a single output that lets you know what the sensitivity is. And in this Morris method, your x-axis is the mean, so the idea is the further to the right you are in this method, the more sensitivity there is in general with this method. The higher on the y-axis indicates more interaction with other variables or non-linearity, so to speak. But really what we're looking for is the further right this is, the more important it is. And separated by month, we're seeing that wind, again, is the more sensitive one in Colorado. And in Florida, we're getting solar radiation slightly above all of these others. We also used an EFAST, or extended FAST analysis, which is a more complicated global sensitivity analysis method. And again, it just varies all of the input values throughout the parameter space. I can't remember the exact number of evaluations we did, but it was somewhere in the tens of thousands evaluations per single day. So we really ran a lot of numbers on this. And this is scaled so that all of these numbers in a single day will add up to one. So one way to interpret this is, on average, in January in Colorado, the wind can play a part in 85% of the variability in that output. So again, the wind is a big deal here, whereas in Florida, you know, solar radiation we're seeing is the most important one, but it's much more balanced. And I think in an ideal situation, we'd want it to be balanced. Now, part of the problem with this is that between Colorado and Florida, we're not comparing apples to apples because we actually do have a different set of sensors. So you can't really, you look at these two graphs and make the conclusion that wind is more important in Colorado necessarily, because I think this is more a result of the sensor evaluated than it is of the climate. So what we did is we took a best case scenario between all of the sensors we evaluated here. We took the best anemometer, the best relative humidity sensor, and took the exact same data set and looked at them using a best case scenario. And so what you see here is, if we did replace the anemometer and another sensor in this case, or use the same set of sensors, we get a much more balanced approach in terms of what's giving us, what could potentially give us error in the output in Colorado and Florida, is more or less the same as what it was before. I didn't have a slide for this, but we did compare the local sensitivity and the two global sensitivity analysis. And so you're talking about something that's very simple that you know, probably a freshman college student could do in a spreadsheet, compared to something that you have to get a postdoc to do. And the comparison between those are very highly correlated. And the reason for that is that the model is not entirely interactive. It's more or less very linear. And the takeaway message is that if you have managers of weather networks that want to do an analysis similar to this, it's very simple to do the kind of test the rails approach and really see what your possible outputs are if you want to get feedback on which sensors you want to improve on. We also did an uncertainty analysis, and I think really because of the anemometer in the Colorado case, we get a much broader bounds in the uncertainty analysis. So this is 5% and 95% cases for each month using the EFAST, the tens of thousands of results. So just to get an idea of what a cumulative distribution function would look like comparing those. So conclusions for this. You know, I think anybody that has a weather network that is doing this type of work, especially for reference ET, I would recommend just taking a historical data set and testing this, it really is a pretty simple analysis. It doesn't take a long time to do, and it gives you a really good idea of what kind of accuracies you can expect. And a local sensitivity is certainly easy enough to do this. It doesn't have to be just this. If you're doing other, say, energy balance type networks like a Bowen ratio system or an EC system, this could be applied pretty easily to get a better understanding for how your sensor output can affect the real numbers that you're trying to get in the end. It's my personal view that there should be more information regarding accuracy and perhaps some standardization, because if they say it's plus or minus 1% or plus or minus half a meter per second, well, is that all the time? Is it 99% of the time? Is it half the time? It's implied, but it's never stated. And for research grade, I mean, we're researchers. We want to know. So it would be nice to include some sort of standard in that case. And I did suggest that the Colorado Network do an upgrade of their wind sensors. And since then, they have started upgrading them. I think they actually had plans to do that before this paper came out, but I think this paper helped kind of push it along a little bit, so I won't take all the credit for that, but I guess it was good timing on our part. And this paper was published in Computers and Electronics and Agriculture earlier this year, so if you'd like to see the whole thing, please take a look at it. If you're doing similar work, please consider citing it in your future research if it's relevant. And with that, I appreciate your time.
Let's take a couple questions. Go ahead.
Where do you get the error data from different sensors? Where did you get it?
I think you might have came in a little late, Sassy. Yeah. So the error data. So basically what we did is we used the quoted manufacturer accuracy, and then that was your error bounds. So for example, on a temperature sensor, if it's plus or minus half a degree, then we evaluated plus or minus half a degree.
Yes, to me it sounds like, I don't see that kind of error range, 0.5. That's a big error range, 0.4 degree.
I'm just throwing out a number here, Sassy. All of these things are listed. I don't make the sensor, Sassy. I just if you want to talk to Campbell, I know they're downstairs.
I'd like to comment on that. 0.4 is reasonable. It's pretty good accuracy. In reality, 0.2 or 0.1 is really challenging on the daily basis, on the hourly scale. That's my personal opinion. Okay.
And again, that comes back to the one conclusion that, well, this 0.4, is that 90% of the time, 99% of the time, 99.9% of the time? Because all three of those numbers are very different things. So, you know, if there was some sort of distribution or you know, range that could be used to quantify that, it would be nice to know. Scientist does have a responsibility to calibrate the sensors for sure, and that's a completely different issue. I mean, a poor calibration certainly can bias that, but it's hard to quantify that without recalibrating and know how far you were apart from that in the first place. I mean, it's certainly part of the conversation. That's a very good point. But this study was done with the assumption that if these sensors were perfectly calibrated, and the only source of error would be an inaccuracy as quoted by the manufacturer, then what do you get there? But yeah, that's a very good point, that calibration is very important and should be done as frequently as needed.
Yeah,
As I mentioned, the anemometers for wind speed in Colorado, they are beginning to replace them with a more modern version. And so, but we haven't specifically tested different sensors for this. This was in Colorado, there is data available at 2 and 3 meters now. There did not used to be, but now they have it available at 2 heights. Thanks for your time.